You're listening to the Husker Cuzcast Sports Show. Now, here's Justin Fielder, Derek Stafford, and Tyler Schaefer.
Hello, everybody. Happy New Year. Welcome to the Husker Cuzcast Sports Show. This is Justin, joined with the cousins, Derek and Tyler. Tyler, you missed last episode. How have you been?
Oh, I've been doing good. We had a bunch of family in town, so I didn't get a chance to sit here and recoup signing day with y'all. So glad to be here tonight.
You missed an elite episode, Tyler.
Very elite episode. Tyler's favorite word is elite, so make sure you let him know how elite he is.
No, it is good to be back. You know, the thing is there's a lot of people in the nation that drinks Kool-Aid, and you two might drink more Kool-Aid than any of them right now. So I'm excited to have your optimism run off on me. So
I tell you what,
I think you're misunderstanding. It's been renamed to Rool-Aid.
You know, after the last 5 years, hearing anybody tell me that I'm drinking too much Kool-Aid just sounds so freaking weird. It really does.
It sounds weird saying it.
Yeah, yeah. What is going on? So we got a great episode planned for tonight. It looks like the coaching staff has been wrapped up. There's been a couple more hires. We're going to talk about three of them that we haven't talked about in previous episodes or with our collaboration with the Generation Red Pod. So if you're not checking out their live streams and their podcast, go subscribe and check them out. We'll be doing a lot more collaborations with the Generation Red Podcast, so looking forward to that. we're also going to rank these assistant coaches now that the staff has been completed, as it appears right now. Talk about a couple new recruits that have been added to the team since the last time we did our signing day episode with which was just me and Derek. We'll talk about some playoff expansion discussion. That's always a fun. We've been wanting to do that for a while. Finally get that. And finally we'll make a national championship pick. So let's get into it. There's three new hires that have come aboard recently. The first one I'll talk about is Bob Wager. He is the high school coach from Arlington Martin. He'll be coaching the tight ends and assisting special teams. Big name in the high school world here in Texas. Derek, what are your thoughts on this hire?
I honestly love this hire. This is one of this to me is one of Matt Rule's better hires, I think. Look, who knows recruiting better than a high school coach? Like these guys, especially a guy that's running with the Under Armour game. I know he's had a big part of that game for quite a few years now.
Last 10.
And then coaching there in Texas where you're dealing with 4 and 5 stars a lot in high school. Like he knows what these kids are looking for. He also brings that connection from Texas. So, I mean, that's always a big thing. I think it's a really good hire. I really do.
Tyler, what did you think when you heard that Matt Rule was adding Bob Wager?
Well, I think what's really interesting about him is, there's been a lot of speculation over the last, almost 15 years now that we've really lost our ties with Texas recruiting. That was criticism under early Frost, criticism under Riley, that we really didn't recruit Texas well. I mean, this is a big step to go back and look at some of our early 2024 offers. We have a couple high recruits out of that Texas community that we're going after, and hopefully those connections kind of play through. I'm with you, Derek. I'm really intrigued by this hire. For people that don't know, this is a definition of a page out of the Matt Rule playbook because he hired 3 high school coaches when he went down to Baylor. I think this was a very strategic hire. One of the more, I don't know if I would say one of the ones I'm most excited about, but probably as fascinating of a hire as we have on this roster.
Yeah, I agree. what he brings with the recruiting aspect, like Derek was saying, that's something needed.
So, Justin, a question for you. Out in Texas, you hear these guys' resume, you kind of like, oh, that's a really good high school resume. Did you know him before this announcement? Or was it like, oh, I know that school?
No. The school, yes, but not the name. Did not know the name.
How many high school football coaches in Texas do you know outside of Waco?
All of them.
So this is that.
I don't feel so good about this Bob Wager hire anymore.
All of them except 30, Bob.
I know 38 coaches in Texas, and Bob is not one of the names.
No, I mean, but the coaches by name, no. Just know the schools and the the reputation of those schools, and this was a good one right there. So let's get on to another assistant coach that was just recently hired. This was kind of a package deal that happened just a couple of days ago. Rob Dvoracek and Garrett McGuire, each of these guys are coming from the Carolina Panthers. We'll talk about Rob first. He's going to be coaching the linebackers. He was a defensive assistant at the Carolina Panthers. Before that, he spent 2 years at Lehigh as the defensive ends and outside linebackers coach. And before that, he spent 2 years as a defensive quality control guy at Baylor. So he was a player under Matt Rhule at Temple. Tyler, what did you think of this hire?
Well, a little bit more I don't want to say puzzled. I mean, the positive is he was a coach that would remain on the Panther staff. I mean, there was a lot of turnover when Matt Rhule left. A lot of coaches were fired. He was one of the ones that was decided to be kept. So he must have been doing something right. If you look at what the Panthers have done in the last few weeks, they've definitely turned it on. I'm probably going to hear the theme on both of these guys, very inexperienced, but I'm definitely – he has that youthful drive and excitement that Matt Rhule clearly has been looking for.
Yeah, just 28 years old, I believe. Derek, your thoughts on Rob Dvoracek?
Well, who would have thought that before we did this all, that I would be praising the experience of our linebackers coach over our wide receivers coach?
Yeah.
That was a shocker. Again, I'll give him a chance, but he doesn't excite me a whole lot. I don't know enough about him. Well, we get him on the recruiting trail and start seeing what he does there. Maybe it'll come around a little bit more. But right now, he's just kind of okay. We hired him.
Yeah, I'm the same. This is a little bit of a not puzzling because this is a name that's been floated out there for quite some time. So it's not a big surprise that.
Well, I think we even talked about him on
Generation the Red Pod. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this name has been out there, but now it's official. So we will see. But the third guy, Garrett McGuire, the 23-year-old wide receiver coach. he's been with the Carolina Panthers the last 2 years. The first year, he was a coaching assistant. And this past year, he was an offensive assistant. As we all know, he was a backup quarterback at Baylor, walk-on. Derek, your thoughts on this hire?
I'll give him time, but right now it's hard to be excited about this hire because he brings nothing to the table right now, or at least not as far as experience goes. We don't know what he's going to be as a recruiter. The one thing about it is he's young, so you think he can communicate well with the kids. And so he brings that to the table. And he's been working in the NFL for a couple of years. So he's kind of got that to fall back on as far as the recruiting goes. But we don't know what development's going to be like under him. We just really don't know much about him.
Yeah. Tyler, your thoughts on Garrett McGuire?
Well, I mean, I think one thing that you kind of look at is the pedigree he's come from. His dad is obviously a well-known coach, Matt Rhule, and now is the head coach at Texas Tech. So, you know, you could say coaching is his blood. You look at him, he joined the Panthers staff at age 21. Like, he was barely able to crack a beer in Charlotte and was able to be a coach. I always kind of thought, like, you know, if ever have kids, maybe instead of getting them in playing football, I'd get them into coaching football. And it's kind of the path that this kid has taken. Like, he was never a star player, but he's been coaching for quite a few years now. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this hire.
You know, there's been a lot of these coaches that we've talked about experience, you know, Power Five experience.
They don't have it.
They don't have it. And there's a lot of guys now that don't even have FBS experience. And
one guy that has no collegiate experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's whatever Matt Rhule is doing, you know, there's a method to his madness, but it's hard to just, you know, buy in blind, you know, have that blind faith that is like, yeah, this is some great stuff going on.
Well, when Matt Rhule was hired, like, so I was really optimistic about the staff he'd bring in. Because if you look what he did at, you know, Baylor, he brought a lot of coaches he had at Temple with him. And then he made some really, really interesting strategic hires, specifically the high school coaches. And I kind of thought, man, he would bring some of his old staff with him. Little did I know it wouldn't be the Baylor staff. It was going to be the Panther staff. I immediately looked up who was on his coaching staff at Baylor, like for guys we'd hire. And there's a lot of names when I saw that. I was like, man, those would be some really good gets.
Absolutely.
And I knew we wouldn't get them all, but I was like, man, if we could pull in half of that Baylor staff and make a few strategic hires. Yeah, I did not expect him to go this way, but he's coached with him. He knows him.
I do trust Rhule. Like, I think he's a smart guy. He sees something in these guys. I don't think he hired him just to be nice. He's seen something in them. But I got a question for you guys, and I truly don't know the answer to this. So he's hired two high school coaches here in Nebraska. One's going to be an analyst, and the other one's going to be a position coach.
Mm-hmm.
Were all three of his high school coach hires at Baylor, were a couple of them analysts, or were they all three position coaches?
I think they were all position coaches.
Were they? Okay. I was just curious. I didn't know what he did there. I mean, I knew Joey McGuire was a position coach. I mean, I knew that. But.
And Sean Bell was also. Okay. I don't remember either. But those are the coaches here. It's nothing that we thought we would see with a $7 billion salary cap or coaches pool, right?
I mean, when these salaries start rolling out, that is going to be like, because what is going to be really hard for Nebraska fans, what's going to be really hard for me is when I start comparing who we hired last cycle and how much we paid them and what I'm expecting these salaries to roll out. Bill Bush was paid $400K. Applewhite was paid in the 50 range, I think. Like, so we hired these guys that had Power Five experience that were really like established collegiate coaches. And I'm like, that seems like something we could have afforded this time.
Well, I mean, to build on that, if you want to compare the last staff to this staff, right? And if you salaries is one thing, compare salaries, but if you look at the resume side by side, and if you think, like, going from positions, from the coordinators all the way down to this wide receiver coach, side by side, all of these guys, where did we, on paper, where did we improve with any of the hires on Coach Rhule's staff, right? Forget offensive coordinator, but, you know, if you're looking at DC. Wide receiver. Yeah, wide receiver, probably a drop back. Running back, drop down, tight end, maybe a step back there, offensive line, step back, because we brought him back. That's a joke, Tyler. Thank you for laughing.
I'm just waiting until you get the second biggest drop back. Special teams, Bill Bush?
Well, no. I think that's a wash right there. I mean,
I'll probably be the only guy that sits here and says I think one of our biggest drop-offs is going to be offensive coordinator.
Are you talking?
I'm not saying Whipple was a great offensive coordinator. man, I don't know how sold I am on Marcus Satterfield. I'm really not.
I'm definitely higher on Satterfield than you are, Derek. I think that, you know.
I'm just basing it off of his numbers from Temple and South Carolina. I don't know that he can't do better here, but just based off of where he ranked running the ball, passing the ball, scoring, he never ranked high in any of those categories.
So one thing I look at with like a guy like Satterfield, and this is one of the things I value about Power Five, is there's something about like going through the process at a Power Five school that I just think is different than a Group of Five, and something that's just different than an NFL assistant. I just think the way you have to recruit, the way you have to retain players, just the expectations and managing the noise from the fans, I just think it is a different breed. And even if it wasn't a home run at your previous stop, I think that experience matters.
I agree with you there. The experience is great, but the numbers aren't there.
Can't ignore how he ended 2022.
That's fair.
And so...
But his whole season was off the premise of those two games.
You know, one of the games that we love to play on this podcast is better, same, or worse. As you're looking at these coaches, like what we're placing, what we're bringing in, like where did we get better?
Tony White.
That's unanimous. Is there any other place that is an obvious better?
Can I ask a question on Tony White?
Right now, I don't think so.
Okay, so put yourself back in January of 2022. How much where Tony White is today versus what you thought Shenander was in January 2022? We were a lot higher on Eric back then.
Sure.
Would you still say it's an upgrade? Yeah. And I'll answer it. I would too. I think Tony White's resume, even what I thought Shenander was a year ago, I still think that is clearly an upgrade.
Well, because even under Shenander, even his best defenses were average, yes, mediocre defenses.
Yeah.
I mean, they looked good, and you could say they kept us in some games. I don't want to just completely downgrade what he did, but...
Well, that's why we thought Eric Shenander was doing a good job, because he did enough to keep us in games. I mean, that's...
Well, he improved every year he was here, yeah. Until this year.
Yep. Yeah. But like all the other positions, is there anywhere else that we get that somebody would get a better
offensive line?
Offensive line, he's got to get better. He can't get worse.
Another year of experience. He's got some Big Ten experience, and okay. I know we're going to talk more about these coaches, and so we might as well get into kind of the excitement meter.
Yeah, let's go ahead and rank these. We'll do it in two different. Go-throughs, I guess. We'll go 1 through 5 and then 6 through 10. Tyler, go ahead. Give us your top 5 assistant coaches.
Best, and I'll be clear. We are not making them from best to worst. I don't think any of us are prepared to say someone's a bad hire or the worst hire. This is kind of like an excitement meter from what we have on them. But my number one is Tony White. We've talked about him a little bit already. His resume is great. I'll kind of just hit the names if we can hit some bullet points after that. But number 2, Evan Cooper. Number 3, number 4, Donnie Raiola. And number 5, Ed Foley.
You had Ed Foley in your top 5. I'm shocked, Tyler.
He's probably. Would I have liked to have seen some Power 5 experience? Yeah. But... I mean, overall, looking at his resume, it is definitely deep. I think Ed, I almost want to get this out of the way right now. My problem with this staff as a whole is not any individual hire. It's the sum of them. Like, yeah. If Ed Foley was on the staff, I'd be fine with him. I have no problem with any individual hire. It's just the sum of lack of experience.
He just really hates that he had to put Ed Foley in his top 5.
I don't hate it. I mean, I do hate it a little bit. I wish Ed Foley would finish like 7th or 8th in my excitement meter.
All right. Derek, your top 5.
All right. Well, I'll agree with you on Tony White. I think that'd probably be all 3 of our picks there. I went number 2, Ed Foley, dude. I love the guy. I know Tyler's just glaring at me right now. He's had great special teams, but he brings more to the table than just that. I mean, he's coached tight ends. He's coached offensive line. He's done things he can help out in other areas if he has to. So I like that he brings that to the table. Evan Cooper's number three. I like Evan Cooper. I got Terrence Knighton at number four. I love him, what this guy's bringing to the table, recruiting-wise. I was really skeptical on him when we hired him. But, man, that guy's 99th in the country and 16th in the Big Ten in recruiter rankings. I mean, he has done something very solid. And Evan Cooper's 88th and 14th in the Big Ten. So, I mean, those two guys, just recruiting-wise, have just impressed the hell out of me.
Just in 1 month, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a very short time. And then number five, I went with Bob Wager because I think he's going to bring a lot to the table, again, when it comes to recruiting.
Okay. I have Tony White as my number one. Yeah, easy number one. Number two, Evan Cooper. I like him for the reasons you guys have. He's experienced as a DB coach and great recruiter. My number three is Ed Foley. I love what Ed Foley does, man. He's put some great numbers, special teams at Temple, and I think it's going to continue here at Nebraska.
Let me just add this, too, about Ed Foley. How exciting is it going to be to have special teams to root for?
Yeah, and not dread. Not dread when they get on the field.
And it was better under Bush. It was a lot better under Bush.
Very much
so. I'm not saying that. But for the past 5 years, we've had nothing to root for special teams-wise. So just having another special teams guy in here is just going to make things so much better, I think.
Well, especially anyway, with his track record in the return game, whether it's punt returns or kickoff returns, he's producing lots of TDs, you know, year in, year out. I'd love to see that come back to Nebraska, because there was a time, not too long ago for us old fucks, but that, you know, having a good, solid punt returner was just a given. You're going to have a good punt returner just like you were going to have a good kicker year in, year out. And I think Ed Foley can get us back there. So he's my number three. My number four is I went with Marcus Satterfield. Just because I'm excited to see an offense. I mean, I don't even know how to explain this. I guess there's kind of a drop-off here once we get to this level. So he just was my number four. But my five is Terrence Knighton. He was a guy that was very low on mine based off experience, but what he's done on the recruiting trail, I think he's going to become a shooting star here at Nebraska. The players are loving him. They're buying into him. And so jury's still out on him as a coach on field right now, but I think he has the right trajectory as coach at Nebraska. Okay, let's do the bottom five, Tyler.
Yeah, my number six is a guy you guys have both mentioned, Terrence Knighton, very much for the same reasons. I like his energy. I like what he brings. He has a little bit more pro experience than any of the other assistants that have it, so that's kind of means something. He's obviously hit the ground strong recruiting-wise. Probably unfair to a couple of these other guys too, because he's gotten a head start on him. So you don't know what Bob's going to do or what Garrett's going to do, but I know what I know right now, and that he's fixed. Number seven, EJ Barthel. Coming from UConn, not exactly known for great running backs, but again, has been here, has started to get in the fold a little bit, gets him a little bit higher. Number eight, Bob Wager. Kind of talked about him a little bit earlier, but his Texas background is intriguing to me. I'm interested there. I'm also interested to see what he'll bring in the special teams room. We complained for years we didn't have a special team. Now we have two. So hopefully he'll be able to keep Ed in track and be able to compete and help the special teams, because I think Bob is going to be the driving force in that room.
There's that Ed Foley hate, Derek.
I don't hate Ed Foley in my top. You guys just love it. Number nine, I'm going to go with Rob Dvorak.
Dvorak.
28 year. Is it come again?
You butcher some of
Dvorak. Dvorak.
Dvorak.
There you go.
Dvorak. Deirdre. Is it? That's not a skateboarder. No, I mean, you know, I said this in the beginning. You know, he made it through the Panthers. The defense was good in Carolina. He was obviously a contributor there. They felt strongly enough that he was adding value that they kept him through the coaching change. And then number 10, just mainly because of the lack of experience, is Garrett McGuire. I am optimistic a little bit. And also, to be honest, it's something that works against him and maybe Ed Foley a little bit too, is the replacement factor. Going from Mickey Joseph to a really unknown person, is as big of a drop off in position coaches as we probably have seen. And maybe it's so good he's inexperienced that he's going to come in with a lot of enthusiasm and hopefully win these guys over. But yeah, that kind of rolls out my top.
Who's your number eight? Who's your number eight, Tyler?
Bob.
Okay. Sorry, I just didn't hear you, I guess. Okay, for number six, I got Marcus Satterfield. I don't hate the guy. I just, again, I'm basing it all off numbers, and that's all I have to go off of. He's fine. I think he'll do fine. I'm excited to see a little more power run game, which I think he'll bring back. Number seven, I went with EJ Barthol as well. And then number eight, I went with Donovan. There's just too much from last year. I mean, he can get better. I believe that. But right now, all I have to base him off of is what he did last year. And we know what that was, and it wasn't great. Rob Dvoracek, I got at 9. And 10, I got Garrett McGuire. Tyler, you talked about going from MJ to Garrett McGuire. And to me, it's more than that. It's not just that we're going from Mickey to him. It's the fact that we thought we had Joe Daly in the bag, or we thought we had Frisman Jackson in the bag. And it seemed like, okay, we got these two, and both those guys had good experience. And then all of a sudden you hear this name and you're Googling the shit out of him trying to figure out who he is. And then you realize he's 23, so he's apparently not old enough to have a Wikipedia page.
Yeah. Google's like, did you mean Garrett's somebody else? It's like, did you mean Garrett McGuire?
Did you mean Joey McGuire?
Exactly. That's what Google said. My bottom five is similar to yours, Derek, obviously, here. My number six is Bob Wager. No FBS experience, but what he brings to the table in the recruiting aspect, I'm excited for. And, just coaching tight ends. I mean, how freaking hard can that be, right? number seven, running back running back coach EJ Barthol. I think he's got a high ceiling, very high ceiling from the things that have been said about him at UConn. So I am excited to see him, but just a limited sample size. Number eight is Donovan Raiola. He's getting a second year, and, I know some people are cutting him some slack, saying that there's improvement, but as I look at this improvement, it's like being measured in inches, kind of like the same way with Scott Frost in his fourth year going 3-9. People are saying that there's like improvement because, he lost 9 games by 8 points or less. I mean, you're measuring in inches. You're not seeing drastic improvement there. So same thing there with Donovan Raiola. And the two newest guys, light on the coaching experience, position coaching experience. So Rob Dvoracek at 9 and then Garrett McGuire at 10. And who knows, if we do this exercise next year, these are going to shape up a lot differently.
Absolutely. And look, Garrett McGuire and Rob Dvoracek could get on the recruiting trail and just tear it up. And, we could turn around and fall in love with these guys.
Yeah. See some good production out of the receivers and linebackers.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, we just have nothing to base it off of.
So it seems like the biggest difference is Raiola. I had him 4th. You guys had him, I think, both 8th?
8th, yeah.
8th, yeah.
So, you guys talked about what Terrence has done recruiting and Cooper's done recruiting. I think we got to give some more of the flowers to Raiola.
Absolutely. He's 136 in the country and 24th in the Big Ten.
Yeah, he's really turned it up a little bit on the recruiting trail. like, I don't want to point out his nephew because I think that's really just unfair to him and really unfair to – but that's got to be in the back of your mind that the number one player in the country is his nephew. And we I know his – it wasn't great life. And I know there was times it wasn't. But one, it is experience to build off of. And that is really necessary. Two, he was not set up to succeed. Not only with what he had in that room when he got there, but you talk about the injuries that occurred, about the offensive philosophy and the changing from week to week and not really knowing. I mean, it just – he wasn't set up to succeed the most last year. And I guess my third thing is, and this is something, Derek, you have harped on, so I apologize for taking your take here, but, like, he convinced Scott Frost and Matt Rhule that he is a good coach. Like, and Matt Rhule, you've heard him just harp on offensive line. I don't think – like, he would trust. And Rhule said it.
He also lost Nuili last year. Yeah. And that wasn't to injury. That was just stupidity. But whatever. I mean, you lost him before the season even started. You lost Prochazka early in the season. He was dealt a pretty shitty hand. I'll give you that.
And again, I don't know if I agree with Rhule, but I'm trusting him. He said flat out, the offensive line wasn't the problem. And take that for whatever it's worth. I had eyes. I thought the offensive line was part of the problem last year. PFF, we talked about, though, like, a lot of times we would rank guys higher than we thought. So maybe there's a lot of intangible stuff that the experts and Rhule saw in the offensive line that was like, man, maybe it's not so bad. So I have a little bit more faith in Donnie than you guys do.
Obviously. And we'll see.
He's another guy that can jump this list very easily. I want to see some improvement. And with him, I can't just go off recruiting. I got to go off of what I also seen him do last year.
Right. I can't turn a blind eye to what we saw on that offensive line last year.
He's like, I say, hey, some experience is better than no experience. And you guys are like, well, I don't know anything about them, so. Let me go. Ed Foley is my number two, even though he has never played a Power 5 game in his life.
Yes, because I think what he did
I know what his numbers look like in Penn special teams.
Yeah. And it was consistent. It wasn't a one-year wonder. It was consistently top 25 special teams play.
But four turns. Like, you guys had both the turns, I think, in your top five. Like, and I think... like, hey, Rhule has at least been in the fire. He at least has a little bit like, this is what I need to do different. He learned from mistakes. He has some ideas on this. He isn't going to be going in blind.
So, and that's fair.
And I move Terrence Knighton solely based off of his recruiting. His recruiting and his ability to come in 30 days and get us the talent that he's gotten here. He shot up my list based off of that. Convincing people to come here to play.
Well, and the thing with Terrence, too, and this is kind of one of the things with recruiting rankings and coaches that I don't always love, but, I mean, you talk about guys that he got to come here, but whether he's the lead recruiter on all of them or not, our defensive line is arguably the best room that we improved through the recruiting rankings this
season. Oh, yeah.
Like, he didn't get credit for... I don't think he got credit for the Texas A&M kid. I'm blanking on his name right now.
Elijah Judy.
Oh, Judy. Yeah, Judy. Yeah. He didn't get credit for him. And all of a sudden, he's one of our top transfers in. Chief Borders, another guy who's a linebacker / that obviously seems like he's going to be a pass rusher. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, so... we added two new recruits this past week here. Ethan Nation, three-star cornerback out of Roswell, Georgia. And Cameron Lenhart, four-star defensive end / edge from IMG Academy. And, with the addition of those two guys, we've moved up. Well, I think we were 26 in Rivals before. We're still 26, fourth in the Big Ten, 24-7. We're up to 25 in the nation in recruiting, 4 in the Big Ten, and on 3, damn dollar service. 29th in their rankings and 5th in the Big Ten. So this staff has done an excellent job at bringing in some quality kids, kids that they can trust. And we're moving up. I mean, I'm really pleased, Derek.
And that Ethan Nation, I think, is an under-the-radar a bit of a guy. His final five was like Alabama, Ohio State, Nebraska, and a couple others. I can't remember who they were. But it's like, when you start stealing guys from Alabama and Ohio State, that's pretty good. And I get he's a three-star, so probably wasn't going to play at those two schools anyway. But still pretty good to be able to steal guys from those schools.
Oh, hell yeah. Tyler, we didn't get your thoughts on recruiting much since you missed last episode. So talk to us about recruiting and your thoughts of what you've seen over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, let me start negative because I have a lot of positive things to say. I think a lot of people are, we saw this under Scott Frost. We saw this under Lincoln Riley. In fact, the only coach that really didn't see a really good finish in their first year was Bo Pelini. In recruiting, I don't want to make this staff has just figured out the whole recruiting thing. I think they really did continue a trend that we've seen. Like I remember Scott Frost, what's going to happen with that recruiting class? And he put it together. Mike Riley did similar his first year. I do want to kind of like hold expectations about how great of recruiters this staff is. On the positive front. I mean, the guys that we brought in this class, I think there was a huge emphasis in the area that we needed it the most. It was taking care of the state. I think they went in and getting Coleman from Nebraska, getting him to stick when Coach Prime was breathing down his neck. One of the best recruits Nebraska's seen was a huge win. And then you look at the other guys we brought in. Multiple defensive linemen. Our next defensive line, something we needed. Bringing in a couple big offensive linemen and kind of bridging that gap in the trenches a little bit, where last year we only brought in one recruit in offensive line. I think the emphasis on this staff and what they did finish and really focus on the trenches was huge. And then fast forward, not beyond this class, looking at what they're starting to get crystal balls and get the momentum for 2024 is just phenomenal. Like there is more recruiting excitement on 2024's class than the last 6-7 years at Nebraska. You have to go back to Friday Night Lights, Mike Riley's heyday for as much excitement as there was in the class in that 2024. And again, I think that's really would not have happened if they didn't bring these guys in. If they would have just missed on Coleman, I don't think these 5-stars, 4-stars would be looking, but I think there's a little bit more excitement in Lincoln than maybe even under the whole Frost tenure.
Do you think Colorado shit that opportunity away when they had some recruits pose with purses for pictures?
I mean, I don't know.
Would Malachi Coleman, would he be at Colorado right now if it wasn't for purse pictures?
No, I don't know if that's true or not. But what I do know is this. It was evident in all the rankings that as soon as Coleman left Colorado, he was in Nebraska. Like, there wasn't, like, it seemed like there was, like, could it go either way? It was, like, the day he got back, it was, like, yeah, he's going to commit to Nebraska. And then he obviously did. And again, he's a guy right there. You want to talk about instant contributors? Like, he is that guy. Like, to me, he is a guy that next year maybe won't start. But I fully expect him not the red shirt, be in the mix.
Well, sure, especially at his position. I mean, wide receiver is such an area of concern anyway.
That position, I did kind of look at this a little bit differently. I mean, obviously, I kind of look at the rankings, the guys, getting Cameron Linhart was probably my second most exciting. But there probably isn't a lot of other guys I look at and say, man, they're going to play next year. But if I had to pick out another guy, the guy we got – yesterday, I guess, Ethan Nation. I do think Ethan Nation could be a guy that comes in and really starts the battle for that DB, especially if we're in a 3-3-5 and we need to get 5 DBs on the field at the same time. I think he is that type of athlete.
So haven't we been having 5 DBs anyway? with Gifford and that nickel.
And JoJo before him.
Yeah, I mean, is it going to be that much different? Instead of going from like a quasi 4-2-5 to 3-3-5? It's not going to be any different than defensive backfield.
I don't necessarily need it to be a ton different. I just need it to be more effective.
Yeah.
That's fair on the defensive backside. I mean, I think that if you look at the way – I'll tell you, secondary is a unit I'm overall really, really excited for heading into 2023. Partially because I really like the coach we brought in. A lot of the guys who came back, I mean, I know we'll do this at some point, ranking the positions, but spoiler alert, secondary is going to be my top two. I'm really excited about that. But I do think right now you look at a couple injuries coming off of last year, Buford being one of them. Yeah. You don't know really where Tommy Hill is going to fit on this team at this point. I do think there's an opportunity to get another guy into that rotation. And I think Ethan Nation is a really prime candidate for a newcomer this year that could contribute there. I do have a question on the 3-3-5. I've asked a couple times. I don't think I've asked you guys because I've been waiting for the podcast to do that. But guys like Jamari Butler, where do they fit in a 3-3-5?
Don't ask me.
That's a great question.
Like, does he go?
I would assume that you're either going to tell him he needs to bulk up and move up to defensive line, or maybe shed a pound or two and play linebacker. I mean, it depends on his body build, I guess.
Because I watched TCU run their 3-3-5, and I was like trying to like put guys on our roster in their roster, and not that we needed to see a Jamari Butler on TCU, but I did not see a guy like that. That where I think his strength is one-on-one pass rush, beat a guy down. And that's what I'll be interested to see. And Blaine Gunderson probably fits in that same mold. He's a little bit bigger. He might be able to easily more go into that DN spot, but.
Yeah, I'm going to add a recruit in there that could be an immediate impact there, Tyler.
Okay.
How about Ed Foley's recruit in Alvano? You think he could beat Bleak Road out? Because he wasn't the best of all kickers last year. I mean, he was good. Could have been better.
I don't know. I mean, I think Bleak Road was good last year. I don't have his stats in front of me. You probably do, Derek.
I don't. I haven't really looked. I know he missed some field goals where it was like, geez, how'd you miss that?
Yeah, I mean.
But for the most part, he was fairly consistent.
I think he's a good get from Gretna. I mean, he's definitely a guy that, you know, from the Ashland community that, you know, a lot of people here are really high on playing, you know, 10 minutes down the road. Obviously, he had the great Class 8 state championship where he made the, whatever it was, a 52-yard field goal game winner, which is huge. But no, I don't know. That's going to be an interesting shakeup. I would be shocked. But, you know, we do need to shed some scholarships and not trying to throw someone out. But if he does, maybe that's a position. I mean, you really need a junior backup kicker on scholarship at this point. Like, I don't know.
The easiest position to shed right now is quarterback. Too many quarterbacks on the roster right now.
Sure. I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, but what is
that number? You don't want to lose. I don't think you want to lose more than one. Yeah, at least.
You need to lose one. But is it two you want to lose at this point?
At least two.
I mean, I think a lot depends if Rayola is coming. If he's not coming, I mean, losing two would be – I mean, if you need to bring a quarterback in next class if you lose two.
Yeah.
Like, that, there's no doubt about that. I mean,
there's seven right now.
And that's not even counting Jared Sinek. And he obviously –
yeah.
I mean, he's a really solid walk-on that – for a third, fourth string guy, you're probably not uncomfortable in that role. I agree.
You think they'd carry six scholarship quarterbacks? That sounds like a lot, man. A lot.
Is that where we're at right now? Seven?
Seven. Casey Thompson, Logan Smothers, Harburg, Chuba Purdy, Torres, and the two that they're bringing in now.
Who's the two? They only brought one in, Jeff Sims.
Is it just... Oh, okay. My bad. Okay, yeah, just six then.
I was just saying. I could have sworn I looked at the scholarship depth chart right now.
Yeah, we're at six scholarship quarterbacks. We lose one. We're at five.
Okay. I stand corrected. Then I thought we had
On three has us at six right now.
And then you have Casey Thompson, who's last two guys, and Casey's not one of them.
You're right. I was going off of seven. I thought we had another transfer.
I don't think you want to lose two. You could definitely easily lose one. That's fine. I don't know which one it is. I'm not going to play the game of who I think it should be.
I mean, you don't know, right? Like, I mean, let's play that game. I mean, like, I think the two names I think that are probably the most hot, or let me throw three names at you, would be Harbor, Smothers, and Purdy. And I think a lot of people, like, if you're saying Purdy's the guy because he didn't wow last year, and to that, but I don't think it's completely like let's write the kid off because he had a couple bad games. I mean, he's still a sophomore in eligibility. I mean, I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough thing when you look at those guys.
It is. I don't personally want to lose any of them, but we're going to have to lose one at least.
It's one of those things you won't be excited when you leave, but you probably won't mourn them.
Yeah, I like Harburg. I know he's not a big guy that everybody likes, but he's always had potential, and I'd like to see if maybe Rule can get a little more of his potential out. He's got the strong arm. It's just decision-making.
Okay, let's move on to Derek's favorite topic here, and it's playoff expansion. Derek loves this. Tyler hates it, so this is going to be a fun segment here. Derek, give us the what the new plans are for the new playoff expansion to 12 teams.
I do love this. I think this is great. So the top six conference champions get an automatic bid. The top rated six conference champions. Sorry. And then the next highest rated six teams will get in. The top four teams will get a bye, and then seeds 5 through 8 will host a playoff game at home against the 9 through 12. And then the quarterfinals and semifinals will be rotated between the New Year's Six bowls. And then the championship game will be at a neutral site as well.
Yeah, I just want to clarify, the top four conference champions, they get the bye.
Yes. Yeah.
Just want to clarify that.
Sorry. I may have not made that very clear, but yes, that is right.
Which could have bit some teams in the ass this year. Well, actually, not bit some teams in the ass. It would have benefited a couple of teams this year.
But it would have bit some other teams in the ass for not winning their championship.
Yep. So, Derek, why do you love this expansion?
Look, every sport that's out there has a real playoff. And there's even in football, you go into every other division of football, they have a real playoff. And we've played bowl games in FBS for all these years, and we've relied on 2 to 4 teams to bring us a champion. And it's just nice to see, you know, there's going to be a guaranteed group of five team in this playoff now. So you have that Cinderella team that's going to be guaranteed a spot. Plus, it's more football. How can anybody bitch about more football?
Yeah. Tulane beat USC, so they came from behind, and USC.
And what an exciting game.
Yeah, USC would have been a playoff team, and Tulane knocked them out.
Tulane would have been a playoff team.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Tyler, I know you're chomping at the bit here. Why do you hate the expansion to 12?
Well, I am not a huge proponent of any expansion. I think 4 was a really decent number. I have yet to see the year that I'm like, man, I really think the 9th-ranked team in the country deserved a shot at the national title. That has not been something. If you wanted to argue 6 teams, okay, I could have been on board. 8 teams, maybe. Okay, I probably would have been fine. I think 12 is too much. Derek, you say who doesn't like more football? I like the Bulls. I think one of the things about college football that I grew up loving is the bowl system. and people say, well, the polls don't matter anymore. The people opt out, and no one cares about the polls. Well, I would say there's two things that go to that. One of the reasons people don't care about the polls as much anymore is because the playoff overshadows it. I think that an expanded playoff is just going to overshadow the polls even more. You're not going to get the USC Tulane game in a bowl game. You're not going to get the Alabama K-State game because they're all going to be only playoff games. So it pretty much kills the bowls. I think the 12-team playoff pretty much kills the bowl system as is. Secondly, instead of people complaining about, well, the bowl system is broken, to me it just feels like they're throwing it out instead of trying to fix the reason why these games don't matter. Like, they don't matter as much anymore because the matchups aren't always the greatest, or because people are opting out. Like, there are things you could do to make the bowls mean something again. So instead of going towards an NFL light, like, I wish college football would stay and have the bowls actually mean something.
I would argue that the bowls started losing meaning when they started putting having too many bowl games and started putting 5 and 7 teams in it.
Sure, maybe. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. If you want to say we need to reduce a little bit of that, I'm not going to argue. Cut back a few bowls. But I would argue some of the problem is, like, The lower tier bowls never really meant anything except for the teams there. I think there was an opportunity to increase the meaning of the middle bowls and have those be better games and more intriguing matchups. And especially with all this conference realignment, people jumping around, like, get away from this automatic conference versus conference and start looking at more intriguing matchups.
You can't say that if you want to be a traditionalist like the bowls that they were, but you still want to revamp them to make them more, like, meaningful and stuff. Well, that's what a playoff does, right? Having a playoff, it's still a quote-unquote bowl game with something actually on the line. And I want to preface this. I think this is one of the more exciting bowl seasons that we've had in recent history. Like, from top to bottom, I thought the bowl games were spectacular this year. There's a lot of great and fun games this year. And especially the meaningful games for expansion. We talked about Tulane USC. Just imagine if that had other implications, like advancing to the next round of the playoffs. What that would do for a team like Tulane.
But who cares if the game itself was a good game? Why can't it just be a good game and that's the way Tulane ends their season? I mean, like, I guess...
You don't find any intrigue on what Tulane might be able to do on the next game?
No, I have no intrigue.
After winning that game?
No, zero.
Oh, man.
I would have
zero. I find a lot of intrigue in that.
I think Tulane would get ran off.
One of the other things I read, I believe it was on MSN, said something along the lines of, you have to be a conference champion to get these buys and to be an automatic qualifier in the top 4 or whatever it is. Therefore, it eliminates any independent school from being able to get a buy. So Notre Dame is getting their hand forced into joining the conference. If that is true, if that is absolutely true.
To get a bye, they have to be part of a conference?
Yeah. Because they have to even be an automatic qualifier. They can't even be an automatic qualifier because you have to be a conference champion. So they can't even be in the top 6.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think they can get there. If they have a season worthy of it, they'll be in it.
Sure, they'll be in it.
They could get in as being one of the top rated teams. But they have to be a conference champion in order to get the top 6 seeds.
Yeah.
Because the top 6 seeds are all your top 6 conference champions.
Talk you guys out of it and say, man, you guys should hate this system. Here's my belief, is that right now, when I look at college football and NFL, those two sports are really close to me. When I think about sports I care about, like, those are two. The difference to me is college football is October and November. And I just don't think that's going to continue. I think this will make NFL probably overtake college football as my favorite sport. Or NBA might. I mean, one of the two.
I hate that.
I don't understand. I don't understand that at all. I hate that
argument. Why would you not care about October and November?
Because the games don't matter.
You still want to be that top 4 team. Sure they do. You have to win your games. You want that bye.
Okay, but I'll tell you this much.
If you're in that playoff, you want that bye.
Alabama right now, I'd be sitting there saying, man, they probably end up in the national championship. Even though they shit the bed all season, I'd be like, man, Alabama's got a real shot at that. You know what I don't want to see is an Alabama-Georgia national title game. And I'd also think,
you know what? If they went through 12 or 3-4 other teams to get there, I'm okay with it. I'm not okay with it the way it is now, where we're only putting 4 teams in and we're going to put 2 of them SEC teams. But if you got to work your way through the playoff to get to where they have to play each other, I'm fine with that.
I say this year, man, we really shouldn't have seen Ohio State in either. Then we can have that debate, and that's a fun debate to have. But at least it matters. Like, I just don't know the sport.
This year's hard, though, because this year – and it didn't work out this way, but really, this is the one year you could have went, okay, Michigan, Georgia, put them in national championship.
Sure.
Because TCU, I mean, and it's great that they won. I'm rooting for them, whatever.
It was a fun game.
After losing that championship game against Kansas State, they did not deserve to be in the playoff.
Nope. And poor Michigan did everything they should have done all year long. And apparently those games mattered. But no, they really didn't, because they don't even get a shot at the national championship now. Because...
They could have figured out how to play defense and not giving up, what, like 51 points?
And the refs could have probably not screwed them out of that touchdown. And it was a really weird game. And yes, TCU won. It was one of the best games I've seen. It was a blast to watch. But, I mean, there was a lot of
pretty – Ohio State should have won their game, too. Georgia shouldn't be in it.
And I mean, you're right.
You can't fold at the end of the game the way they did. There were some questionable calls, too. But whatever. I'm not here to argue semantics about it, but –
what I don't understand is, if people love college football so much, like, why can't we just keep it the way it is? Like, my thing is, what sport has been massively improved by playoff expansion? Because I'll tell you, NFL hasn't.
FBS football.
Baseball.
That one wild card buy-in.
Yeah, I do.
I'm not a huge fan of it.
I'll tell you what I didn't love with baseball. I didn't love 2-4 teams getting into the playoffs, the top 2 in the West and East of National League and American League. I didn't love that.
So bring this back to football. FBS improved by going from the BCS system to a 4-team playoff. That was an improvement over the way that they did.
I agree.
Their championship before. And I think adding more teams to that adds more interesting matchups.
And look, the BCS was an improvement over what they did before that.
I don't know.
That's fine, but that kind of started the whole thing.
I don't know if the 4-team playoff is drastically better than the 2-team playoff, than the BCS championship. But the problem is that we're not talking about getting – the problem with the 2 teams is – that 13, you're like, and there's like a 3-team debate and who's actually the best. I think the 4-team team solved that. Like, there's very rarely I'm sitting there saying, man, that 7th team in the country isn't getting a shot at the national championship. Because that 7th team usually has 2 losses.
I think what it does is it kind of helps out with this bias that the SEC is so friggin' great that everybody just needs to bow down to the SEC. Make them play some teams. Hell, in this scenario, make them come up north and play a game. If they're an 11 seed, let them come play the 6 seed team up north. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I love the fact that some playoff games will be held on campuses.
Sure.
I think that will be awesome.
That'll be a lot of fun for the teams. And again,
to watch.
Sure, but the rest of the bowls, you just might as well cut them. You might as well just cut every other bowl.
Why? You don't have to cut them.
Fundamentally, will not matter, and they'll be
they
shitty
don't matter
matchups.
Now. I still watch,
but they'll
them.
Be shitty matchups. You aren't going to have a top 10 team. You aren't going to have 2 top 10 teams play.
So they'll be know, those guys be will be playing in the playoff for where it matters.
Dude, I watched East Carolina play. I don't want to hear shit.
I just honestly just don't want you guys to watch college football. Like, leave my sport alone. Go fucking watch the NFL. Because that's what you want. You want the NFL. Just don't watch college football anymore. If you don't like the sport, just stop it.
I love this sport.
I want him to be the same as everybody else. I want him to be at least the same as FCS.
Go watch FCS football then. Leave my sport alone.
It's your sport now.
Well, because you guys want to change it. Hey, I'm fine with it.
It's being changed. It is being changed whether we want it or not. It's happening.
Money. It's Tyler. All because of money.
Tyler, get off my lawn, would you?
God, yeah. Damn. It's just like I'm tired of people saying, I love football, but I want it so much different. Do what the NFL's doing.
Hey, you know what? I will never say no to more meaningful matchups.
So what? Games.
That's fine. I love bowl games. I thought this year was an excellent year for the bowl games. And I'll watch the bowl games that happen before Christmas. I will watch every minute of those. I love the games.
I'll be fine if you want to go to, I don't know, what, 65?
I think that's
bowl games. Just let everybody play in them.
Yeah,
I don't care.
I honestly, you
give
know
everybody,
I think
give everybody
do.
A participation trophy. I don't care. I honestly think I'll watch every one of them.
I think they should just get rid of the regular playoff to begin the year. Just have a 128-team playoff and not.
Yeah, that's all we need is one game Nebraska seasons. That's all we need.
That's the next expansion.
Well, you gotta make a double elimination at that point, at least, right?
Double elimination. I like that, Jerry. That's the next expansion they need to go with.
All right, so Tyler, you're pretty fired up here, so we'll get out here in a second. The national championship game is next Monday night, number 3 TCU versus number 1 Georgia. Georgia's a 12.5-point favorite here in this game. I think it's coming down a little bit. Who do you like in this game and why?
I want TCU to win. I am a huge Max Duggan fan. I think he is underrated as a future NFL prospect. I've loved watching him play, the games I've watched. But Georgia, I am fairly – I've already bet my money on it. Georgia is going to steamroll TCU.
You think so? You bet Georgia already?
Oh, yeah.
What line did you get?
I got a 13.5, and now that it's dropping, I might go double down on it. I mean, let's be real about what we saw in that Michigan game. We saw some really, really crappy – red zone moments for Michigan, and we saw 2 pick sixes for TCU. Like, yes, if Georgia throws 3 pick sixes and they fumble on the 1-yard line, then yes, I think TCU could be in this game. But if those events don't occur in TCU's favor, and TCU's probably out there starting running back, I just don't think I think this is going to be probably an early night. I did bet the over, too, though. I think it's going to be a higher scoring game. I think
What's the over-under?
I got it, I think, 62. I mean, okay. Georgia might put up 49. I think TCU is good for at least 17.
Tyler, what kind of bourbon are you drinking tonight, anyway?
Woodford.
Hey, my wife got me a bottle of Colonel E.H. Taylor.
Sounds good.
It is absolutely phenomenal.
Any whiskey? On it is a damn good whiskey.
Like a $150 bottle.
Okay, I just want to say this. I get this off my tongue here because Tyler, don't talk about the NFL when you're talking about college football. God damn it! When you're talking about Max Duggan, don't be talking about the NFL. We just had this argument about how we're not trying to make college football into NFL. Don't be talking. I don't care. Don't be talking about the NFL when you're talking about college football. Good God.
It's like the divisions. I hear this shit all the time. Like, you know what I really want is to see, like, the Big Ten go into, like, 14 pods, exactly like NFL divisions are set up. It's like, yes, let's do the exact same thing as the NFL.
It's not because it's what the NFL's doing. The reason I like that is because then teams can play all the Big Ten teams in a matter of 4 years, rather than playing Indiana once every 6 years.
It'll be great.
And playing Michigan 6 years in a row.
You know what? I'll tell you this much. Just go call Roger Goodell and get the NFL scheduling because they've already got this blueprint laid out.
So
and there's a really good sport on Sunday that
you don't have
exactly
any intrigue. You don't have any intrigue in Nebraska playing other teams other than Michigan and Ohio State from the other division.
You know, Better yet, maybe we can get Roger Goodell when all the fans boycott Roger Goodell for not stopping that game immediately, so he can become the commissioner when Kevin Warren goes to become the president at the Chicago Bears.
Well, you gotta have that blueprint.
Derek, who do you like?
I don't like either one, but Georgia's going to win.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Kevin Warren or Roger Goodell. It's like, I don't like either one. No, I'm talking about the game. Either.
That's true.
Do we have another game? Yeah, you know what? I'm with you, Tyler. TCU got extremely lucky in that game. Michigan did not play good ball. You just don't – unless you're coming up with a couple pick sixes and finding a way to score defensively – I just don't see a way for TCU to beat Georgia. I'll root for them. I hope they win, but I don't see it.
Do you think they cover?
I think they have a good chance of covering, but yeah. Just because Tyler bet them.
Yeah, I think they cover. 12.5, that's about as, I don't know, 12.5 is kind of like that iffy thing. I didn't realize it dropped down to 12.5. I thought it was like still like 13.5, but we'll see what it is when it gets there. That line's got to go back up, right?
I would think.
I think a lot of people want to see TCU win. I think they're a really fun Cinderella story. So I don't know what you doing at this point. What I will say in TCU favor though is where Ohio State took advantage of them is dynamic wide receiver, and TCU's got that. They got the quarterback and wide receiver duo that really gave Georgia fits. I think TCU could score points. I just think they have zero shot of stopping Georgia. Like, I just think it's going to be bad, their defense trying to do anything.
Really?
And also, I also love the whole, we give this, the whole 3-3-5 of TCU.
Oh, that was so funny.
Everyone's like, look at the, what 3-3-5 can do against Michigan. 500 yards later, I'm like, I'm not saying 3-3-5 won't work in the Big Ten, but don't use that as your litmus test of why it's going to work.
That all came out after like the first quarter when Michigan could not move the ball on them.
Well, except the 75-yard Michigan
made some
run.
Adjustments.
Yeah, except for that one long run they had.
Hey, so I'm looking it up right now. TCU, Georgia, 84% of the tickets are on TCU right now.
I think the public sentiment, they want to see TCU.
Where are they playing the game? What, is it New Orleans? Is that it's right?
Wherever the SoFi arena is or field is, because they won't allow tailgating there.
Oh, that's probably not New Orleans.
It's embarrassing. I don't know.
I'm
not sure either. I was thinking it was New Orleans, but I could be wrong.
Shit.
Who do you got, Justin?
You know, I mean, I have Georgia winning it, but I have TCU covering.
It's in California. It's one of the NFL stadiums. Oh, so it's just that explains we're a lot. Moving the NFL, so we're getting rid of tailgating. It's more. Don't worry, guys.
Well,
your dream is safe.
It's California. They don't allow anything.
Oh, with the transfer portal, I mean, it's get free agency. I mean, NIL players are getting paid. Tyler, this must be all eating you up inside.
It's the NFL D League. That's what they're going to rename it.
D League or G League?
Whatever.
I don't know. Whatever. All right, guys. Any parting shots here?
No. Just hope everybody has a good New Year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excited. What are we coming back on?
I don't think that we'll be back until recruiting. First weekend of February, unless something major happens.
Yeah. I don't foresee anything happening between now and then, but
yeah,
we'll plan on then. And if something happens, we might put an emergency episode out.
Yeah. Sure. Well, get ready for spring ball. I'm excited. This is going to be one of the more exciting springs we've had in a while. Lots of changes. So
yeah.
What percentage chance do you give the spring game of selling out?
Saying there's a chance.
There's a chance.
About 80% chance? 90%?
It's going to sell out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't wait. All right. Well, special thanks to our producer, Connor Russell, for putting this audio together for us. Look for our podcast anywhere you get your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Husker CuzCast. On behalf of Derek and Tyler, we want to thank everybody for listening. And as always, go Big Red.